It's the Capital Connection this week. Normally I, David Gustina, sit in the producer's chair for this program. I'm fortunate enough to be sitting in for Alan Chartok, who is not here right now. He is away. And equally fortunate, in fact, honored to be sitting in with his normal sparring partner on the program, me and Mario. That would be former governor of New York State, Mario M. Cuomo. Governor, thank you for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Obviously, today the topic is the tragedy, the terrorist attack. First time the United States has ever been attacked on multiple fronts. We have stopped all air travel within the United States. Still at this time, the airports are shut down. That's the first time in history. People are comparing it to Pearl Harbor. The president, the secretary of state, and others are already saying this is tantamount to war. We're going to get back at when we locate and find the terrorists. I spoke with you briefly yesterday when you mentioned Senator Orrin Hatch had said that the prime suspect, and others have come out since, is Osama bin Laden. Let me start there and say, how are we going to find a faceless person? How are we going to get them? Let's say, and not make a mistake in the process.
Well, it would be foolish, I think, to suggest that this country or any country, any government, is capable of executing its objectives perfectly without making a mistake in the process, as you put it. And now that's particularly clear since the government has failed entirely to protect us from a threat that was first made clear to us in 1993 when terrorists first bombed the Trade Center. And I know because I was governor at the time, and I recall specifically promises like the ones I'm hearing now that said we will beef up our surveillance, we will beef up our inspections, we will tighten the rules, we will do this, we will do that, we will get them, we will stop them. Well, none of that happened. We did find several individuals who were apparently responsible. We never found what we suspected was the organization behind them. We never challenged that organization successfully. We never stopped people from being able to walk through the machines at airports, carrying all sorts of things with them, including, it appears, knives of various kinds and carpet cutters. So, we're not going to be able to do anything perfectly, but I think it's clear what the country as government has decided it wants to do over the next week or two. It started by talking about this being a war, not with some loose rhetorical analogy to Pearl Harbor and the Second World War, but specifically Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, says on television, yes, it is war. John McCain, the Republican senator, says it is an act of war. Do you mean that literally? Yes. Now, why is that? Well, if you declare it a war, if the president says it is a war, then the War Powers Act is implemented, and the War Powers Act gives the president various kinds of authority to deal with the spending of money in support of the nation in a war. And so they've done that. They've declared it to be a war. They've also, by leak, I guess, and statement by sources other than the government, made it clear that they think bin Laden is the guilty person heading this organization. Three or four now, the president makes it clear in his statement with one incisive sentence that in going after bin Laden, since bin Laden and his organization are not a nation and will have the cover of a nation or at least be present somewhere with the tolerance of a nation, he makes it clear that he will hold the nation responsible for bin Laden's presence and for harboring bin Laden with one sentence. And he did that memorably, I think, when he said there will be no difference in the treatment we give to those who harbor the terrorist from the treatment we give to the terrorist. So all the pieces are in place. What will happen now? Well, my guess is that at one point soon, they will say, we've been investigating and we have concluded it is indeed Osama bin Laden. He is located probably in Afghanistan, wherever, and They would then call upon the government of Afghanistan and the ruling authorities there to say, you know, this is war. We are after bin Laden. Turn him over. Give us access. And if not, consider yourself a co-partner with him in this conspiracy to make war on the United States. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay, let's follow this through. Let's say that we find Osama bin Laden, we locate him, they turn him over. Then what should happen? You're a vocal opponent of the death penalty. Well, how should we handle a guy like this?
I'm against the death penalty. So obviously, I wouldn't be asking for the death penalty. The government disagrees with me, the federal government, the way the government of the state of New York disagrees with me. So presumably, some of them will be tempted to ask for the death penalty. But I don't think killing Osama bin Laden achieves the objective. The objective is to do as much as you can to end transnational terrorism that is organized, well-funded, well-equipped with instruments and with personnel, like, for example, professional pilots who could fly these planes that created the havoc and the brutal tragedy of September 11th. And we have to get at that organization. The way you do that is not just by executing or even capturing and incarcerating bin Laden, but by getting his whole network and following the trail of that network and uprooting it wherever it leads, in whatever nations it is, or in Boston or New York or Los Angeles in the United States, wherever it is, and uprooting it and doing this with the help and perhaps the active participation of allies around the globe, like Great Britain and the powers of Europe and even some moderate Arab powers like Jordan and Egypt. And that's what we have to do. We will never be able to protect ourselves against the individual mad zealot who, in the name of God or religion or paranoia, believes that you are the evil empire, United States of America, and you are the force that opposes good in this world, and you must be destroyed or injured to the extent that I can injure you. You can't stop that person from walking in with a hidden bomb, given the technology that is changing so rapidly and making so many different things that we used to consider improbable now almost popular. So we can't get at the individual, but we can certainly get at the organizations, like the one that obviously created this. And that has to be the objective. So what happens? You wipe out the network, however long it takes, says the president and the secretary of state and the Congress people on both sides in both houses, however long it takes, however much money it takes, we commit to doing it, and we do it. Look, if we could win the Second World War, which we did, and talk about being underdogs when we began that, we can certainly make a difference in transnational terrorism. Can't stop it entirely. You can't stop madness in this world, but you can certainly make a big difference.
Governor, let's move to the home front for a second and the tragedy itself. I was, of course, glued to the television last night watching Mayor Rudolph Giuliani in New York City thank countless people for their support, volunteers, everyday citizens banding together, showing their spirit for America and fellow Americans to help out during this tragedy. But one of the things that was brought up by a reporter during that press conference was, how are you going to ensure that people's stereotypes for certain ethnic groups, for example, people whose religion is Islam, how are we going to ensure, and what should we be saying to Americans about not turning this mourning into anger and taking it out, which I think is a danger, on these ethnic groups that really make up the fabric of our society?
I said on a show, Good Morning America, I think it was, that in 1993, with all the ugliness of the killing of six people and the bombing of the World Trade Center, the way the people of New York City and New York State reacted was an inspiration to me and to many other people. It was marvelous the way they came together, people of all colors and races and nationalities and economic condition and profession, volunteering, heroic firemen, heroic police people and emergency medical service people, the politicians of all stripes, everybody working together. It was marvelous, marvelously well-coordinated, cooperative, unified, and we had tremendous efficacy as a result of that. That's happened again, and that's what Mayor Giuliani was talking about, and Governor Pataki. Both of them, incidentally, have done a wonderful job, in my opinion, and especially the mayor, who naturally took the lead because it is the city of New York. The only other time in the history of the nation during my lifetime that we were like this was after the Second World War, when after Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, we realized that we were in a war literally for our lives and for freedom. Freedom was really at stake. President Bush and Colin Powell and others have said this is an attack on freedom. Yeah, that's true, poetical perhaps, but true, but not quite the kind of attack that Japan and Germany and the Axis powers were making. That togetherness that brought us through the Second World War, blacks working side by side by whites, people never even reflecting on the difference of skin color or whether you're wearing a turban and I'm wearing a beard or whatever. That which was true in that crisis, which is true in the crisis of the first World Trade Center bombing and now today, true at the time of the blackout, true in all the crises that we face. If only we could learn to do that in the periods between crises, with the quiet catastrophes that we face, like poverty, and racism, and sexism, and all the other problems of this society, which we quibble over and we fight over and retard our progress because we can't come together. I think if we can manage that cooperative attitude again, then we can work wonders, including not getting rid utterly of terrorism, at least reducing it to the bare minimum.
I've been reading in the New York Times and watching on television, and as I'm sure you have, Governor, about these terrible tragedies, about people not knowing where their families are, of people discovering that someone they love has been killed. And some people turn to religion, some people turn to each other, some people don't have anybody to turn to. People are left in despair. What do you say to these people? How do we comfort people at this time who really believe that there's no hope or are so distraught that they're contemplating hurting themselves or giving up? What do you do? What do you say?
The anguish has been great, obviously. People wondering. In a way, the anguish will mount over the next several days and perhaps even weeks. As you start putting specific faces on the bodies of the people who were killed, as the names start appearing in the New York Times, in your local publication, as the scroll of death starts unwinding on the television screen, when all those funny sounding names with the different ethnic implications, you know, all the unknowns, all the plain people, all the simple people, husbands and wives and mothers and fathers and lovers and children, one at a time. Imagine the pages of the New York Times, thousands of names of people killed. That's when the real impact will strike, and I'm afraid the anger will mount. What do you do to console them? I'm not smart enough to know. I don't know who does know. But there are things that come naturally. I mean, there are things that come naturally to all of us. If it's an intimate situation, you know, the embrace, the touch, showing up, inquiring, just being there, just making it clear that you think about enough about this person and you know enough about their pain that you are desperate to alleviate it, even if you don't know how. And just silently letting them know you care, that's about as much as you can do. You don't have to give a speech. You don't have to write a poem that says, I share your pain. as long as you act as though you do. And you can do that with strangers. And you can do it by contributing to funds, by praying in church, by praying in the mosque, by praying in the synagogue. You can do it a lot of ways. We can do it on television by our celebrities who we look up to, you know, calling upon us to remember. The leadership of the society can lead us all in doing it. And there are many ways. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be well-educated. You don't have to be very clever. You don't have to be imaginative. You don't have to be an artist. All you have to have is feeling for other human beings. There are plenty of ways to demonstrate it.
Governor, I was raised to believe that something good always comes out of something bad. This is certainly something bad, evil, I would argue. Can anything good come out of this?
Well, of course, you know, you could make a lot of semantic voyages here and be cute with words. But I guess, realistically, we are changed forever as a nation as a result of this, or at least for the rest of my lifetime and probably my children's lifetimes. But I think all the change is not for the worse. Some of the change is that we will be more suspicious. Some of the change is we will be forever saddened by the irreplaceable loss of a loved one. We will change because we have an anger that we can't totally erase, probably, for the rest of our life. We will be more suspicious. We will probably be less free than we have been, more burdened with inconveniences, because we'll try so hard to protect against this kind of thing happening again that it will intrude upon our travel and our everyday existence, not so much as to create any kind of constitutional crisis with our great freedoms of the First Amendment, but it will be different. We will be vulnerable, proven vulnerable, for the first time, and it will be hard after more than 200 years of being safe from invasions of our space, real invasions. It will be difficult to feel the way we used to feel. On the other hand, it's possible that out of this will come a meaningful struggle against transnational terrorism. For the first time, a truly well-organized, deployed, active effort by nations all over the world who value decency, and that's most nations, against any nation that honors the kind of mad terrorism that bin Laden has espoused, promoted, and may have activated in the case of the September 11 tragedy. So maybe that will be a good. And then the ultimate possibility for good will be that this coming together, this fusion, this unity that's created in our moment of need, as it was in the Second World War in 1993 and now again September 11, 2001, that we realize that we came together as 180 different ethnicities, as all sorts of different people. Maybe we came together in New York City so well and so strongly because we are so different. We know how different we are one from the other here. No place in the world has more difference. And sometimes that's a cause of alienation. But when the crisis comes, it also says to each of us, look, we must hang together or we will be destroyed. Precisely because we are so diverse, we understand the need for togetherness better than most people in crises. Maybe after the crisis, this time we will remember it. And that will be the good. We did something about transnational terrorism, something significant. And we proved that we could stay together, arm in arm, to defeat all the enemies we face, not just enemy nations and terrorists, but the enemies called disease and illiteracy and poverty and stupidity and selfishness and greed and all of that, that would be a great good, and it's possible.
So do you think that even in the Congress, we might see some meaningful discussion, some solutions to some of the nation's problems that up till now have seemed to be finger-pointing?
We could, because it has to occur to these highly intelligent people that if they could come together this way on this great cause, as beautifully as they have so far, and wage a successful battle against these forces of evil, why couldn't they do it with Social Security and Medicare and all the other things? Why aren't they intelligent enough? I think when they raise that question after this, some of them might simply say, hey, look, let's pretend it's a crisis and get it done.
The pictures that I saw yesterday of Palestinians, very vivid, and I'm sure many Americans were angered by seeing these folks from a different culture who were cheering for what had happened to the United States. And despite, obviously, my personal feelings about that, and I'm sure yours, do you think Americans are going to be forced into recognition that there are other cultures in this world and that there are inequities that are the example of why these people are cheering in such a fashion? In other words, are we going to come out of the sort of cultural box and understand that the world is based on perception and that there are other people in this world who perceive us differently, and maybe we need to tackle those inequities so that we can all be on the same page?
Well, I hope so. That will depend very much upon the leadership of the president, particularly, because it's the president who is mostly involved with foreign policy, and it's the president who leads the way. And we could come out of this, and I hope we will, because we need to, just as you point out, have a better respect for our interdependence and our interconnectedness globally, and be better at communicating to other people on the globe that we understand their significance as well as our own. You're correct about that. Now, the president, until now, has chosen a different course, basically. He has chosen to emphasize those opportunities to disassociate from the rest of the globe. And so we don't need the Russians for our anti-missile plan. We can walk away from them. We can ignore previous treaties, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need this group. We don't need that group. We'll show them. Okay, and some of that is appropriate at times, of course. We are a great nation, and we ought not to be bullied by smaller nations. I understand that. But the answer to your question is we can use this occasion to heighten our sensitivity to the need to convince the rest of the world that we are not an evil empire. Just because we know we're not doesn't mean that we don't have to prove it to other people. And we can if the president shows the leadership.
Governor, thank you for taking all this time to talk with us today. A true honor to talk with you. And we know we'll hear you each week on Me and Mario. Again, thanks for being on the Capital Connection with us this week.
Thanks for having me.